Today's reading is the poem, Now I Become Myself, by Mae Sarton, a white woman. Now I become myself. It's taken time, many years and places. I have been dissolved and shaken, worn other people's faces, run madly as if time were there, terribly old, crying a warning, hurry, you will be dead before... What? Before you reach the morning? Or the end of the poem is clear? Or love safe in the walled city? Now to stand still. To be here. Feel my own weight and density. The black shadow on the paper is my hand. The shadow of a word as thought shapes the shaper falls heavy on the page is heard. All fuses now, falls into place, from wish to action, word to silence, my work, my love, my time, my face, gathered into one intense gesture of growing like a plant, as slowly as the ripening fruit, fertile, detached and always spent, falls but does not exhaust the root. So all the poem is, can give, grows in me to become the song, made so and rooted by love. Now there is time, and time is young. Oh, in this single hour, I live all of myself and do not move. I, the pursued who madly ran, stand still and stop the sun. Our speakers are Carol Price and Norma Heiser, and they have brought us two presentations of what we call This I Believe. Carol will go first. Carol Price worked as a clinical social worker for New York State and moved to Portland as part of her retirement plan. She arrived 3 months before the flood of '96 and ended up working with FEMA. She then worked with PSU students in a pilot program at Coffee Creek Women's Prison. About 8 years ago, she wandered into WOOF to put up a poster, stayed for the service, and has been here ever since. Welcome, Carol.
Thank you, Kim, and good morning. Shakespeare has written, "There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, that are dreamt of in your philosophy." In the late 70s, I was in the staff room of the agency where I worked, meeting with my new social work supervisor, when someone walked by whistling, and I began to involuntarily shudder. She couldn't help but notice, and she asked me who I know that whistled. When I said my father, who had died earlier that year, used to whistle, I was totally stunned when she described my father in accurate detail. A few weekends later, I brought flowers to a gathering over the weekend, and when I passed her at work, she said, "I see yellow and white daisies all around you." And then things began happening that could not possibly be happening. And although they had no place in the philosophy I dreamt of, I found them fascinating. And I decided to join her on a shamanic workshop she was attending. During the workshop, although I was involved in everything we were doing, there was always a little part of me hovering around saying, "Really? Oh, come on. That's just a coincidence." Saturday, before dinner, we were sending healing energy at a distance, and there was a young woman at the agency with whom I was concerned, so I concentrated on sending her energy. When I saw her in the agency after the workshop, she told me that Saturday morning she began to get command hallucinations which frightened her. In an attempt to drown them out, she began screaming and couldn't stop. Then, around dinner time, she suddenly fell asleep, and when she woke up the next evening, the episode was over. That coincidence shattered any remnants of the cultural trance with which I was leading my life, and I was committed to finding out everything I could about this unseen world. So I signed up to join a group going to Peru to travel with shamans. The trip to Peru was one of the most wretched and wretching experiences. As soon as I landed in Peru, I began running a fever and throwing up. I threw up on every sacred site we did ceremony. I was miserable, and people in the group kept coming up to me and saying, "Great, you're detoxing." I vowed never to go back to Peru. But then, extraordinary things began happening in my work, and I ended going back 3 more times. One time, I was working with a client, and all the time he was talking to me, I kept seeing in my head a young boy hiding in a tree, witnessing an Indian raid on his family. When I asked him if that had any reverence to him, any meaning to him, he replied without hesitation that his grandmother's family were wiped out in the Nazi death camps. Another time, I had a client with a diagnosis of schizophrenia, and he had messed around with street drugs and began hearing voices. I knew if the medical staff found out, they would hospitalize him, shoot him up with Thorazine, and he would come out of the hospital drugged with nothing gained. Our agency was on a street similar to Canyon Highway with this spindly little tree in front. I have no idea what I was thinking, but in an act of desperation, I took him outside and showed him how to do an energy exchange with the tree. To both our amazements, it quieted the voices, and I remember him saying, "Carol, I can't stand here all day hugging a tree. They'll put me in the hospital." And my thinking, "Yeah, I'll be right there with you." When I shared these happenings with my social work supervisor, she told me how many of my colleagues were also doing therapy out of the box, and how many of the psych nurses were using energy healing. Now I'd like to fast forward about 35 or more years to October of 2012. I've just been diagnosed with cancer, and I am in St. Vincent's Hospital on 8 o'clock on a Wednesday morning when someone from WUF suddenly came into my room and began doing energy work. The medical staff kept coming in and out and apologizing, as this was a very normal, everyday happening. And one of the nurses shared with us that she had had cancer, and her colleagues and the nursing staff helped her through it with therapeutic touch. I woke up in the recovery room as if I had had a nap, feeling clear, strong, and hopeful. So, I believe Einstein when he says, "Everything is energy." This is not philosophy. This is physics. Not everything that counts can be measured, and not everything that can be measured counts. I believe shamans when they say, on some level, we all want to go home to our spiritual roots before religion, government, and our institutions told us, "Hey, you can trust us. We've got it." I believe the Bible when it says two are better than one because we can help each other. And in conclusion, I believe Ram Dass when he says, we are all here to walk each other home. Namaste.
As an Oregon modernist artist, Norma Heiser participated in Wolf's Dahl Gardner Gallery events in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. In the 1990s, when she was searching for a spiritual community, Dahl convinced Norma that Wolf would be the place for her. Norma regrets being too late for her two sons to participate in Wolf RE, but confesses they grew up almost perfect anyway. Wolf's lay leadership opportunities and volunteer coordinator Rosie Hamilton gave her the joy of creating many programs and events for Wolf over the years. She's filled with Wolf memories of many more joys than sorrows. Welcome, Norma.
According to my dictionaries, belief is something one accepts as true and truth of fact or belief. This is my fourth This I Believe. The privilege of presenting is the growing awareness that life and time changes my beliefs and helps keep me up to speed on who I am. Since 1991, Wolf has been my university of choice because of my belief in its motto, the 7 UU principles: justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of consciousness and the use of the democratic process, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, and respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. I love that one. I believe the 7 UU principles are a great topic for ongoing conversation. Excuse me. My inner laboratory is located in myself. It's a place where I study and work on a hypothesis devoted to the importance of equalizing my body, mind, and spirit in all matters, inside and outside. Inside is where I find my truth when I give equality to my thoughts, feelings, and beliefs. I believe the good I can do for others is to let go of my projected judgments of what is right and wrong for the other person. I believe knowing as much as possible about humanness and human diversity helps me understand suffering and joy. I believe as I study myself, I'm also studying others, and I learn by listening, talking, trusting the moment to teach what I want and need to know. As a parent, I believed my job was to grow my children into something at least resembling myself or their father. It wasn't a good idea because it was not possible and could cause unhealthy discomfort. I choose now to recognize my discomfort by admitting it, naming it, taking responsibility for it, and changing the conditions causing it. My offspring and my participation at WOOF have been my best teachers in that area. Today's This I Believe cohort and friend, Carol Price, gave me this book, Force of Character, by James Hillman, last year for my birthday. James is literate, scientific, theological, intellectual, philosophical, and creative, making this book a hard read for me. However, it has embedded a new belief, and I'm not sure it's mine or his. This is how I read and understand it. I was born with a cellular birthprint of natural, innate character. No two people are born with the same imprint, unless we're cloned, which is a possibility from now on. I am uncovering my birth characteristics, three of which are curiosity, humor, and abstraction, all of which distort my communication. I can be misunderstood when making assumptions from curiosity, humor, or abstraction. The trouble is, those characteristics can be more fun than factually dependable. James' message to me is that birthprint characteristics insist on taking a major role in our elderhood, 80s, 90s, and 100s, if we're lucky enough to be here. Natural character is altered by life, by childhood, parenting, education, and social structure. However, it can show up later frustrated, emerging as cantankerous, irascible, unacceptable behavior. Among those, I'm noticing impatience and intolerance. I tend to welcome it because it supports the belief I've needlessly subdued for a long, long time. Sometimes curiosity makes me ask you who you are, how you feel, and what you want and think. You may consider it none of my business. I will consider your honest disclosure about that kind, just, and compassionate. I believe in honest self-disclosure coming from the natural human trinity of thought, feeling, and belief. My current passion is writing. It talks to me, tells me who I am. It's the harbinger of myself. If I were to use the pronoun she as I describe me, it would help detach myself from her dreaded ego. However, what I write and read is relentlessly all about me and the ego I've hosted for 86 years and own unequivocally, almost unapologetically. I think about death more often now. My image is a dried leaf falling off a tree and becoming dust. I'd rather not be pushed around by an air blower or put in somebody's truck. Of course, I have no control. The best thing about aging is noticing I like myself now. That's a surprise. Here's a song I sing to myself sometimes. It's wonderful, it's marvelous that I should care for me. It's awful nice, it's paradise, it's what I like to see. I've made my life so glamorous, I can't blame me for feeling amorous. Do-do-do-do, it's wonderful, it's marvelous that I should care for me. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Just one more thing. I hope you will come to this podium for your this, I believe. Take the opportunity to express and enlighten us with the wonderful, unique, intrinsic self life is giving you. Okay, thank you.
For if anybody has any comments or questions, or if you want to, if you were inspired to talk about what you believe.
I want to say thanks to both of you. I think it sometimes takes a lot of courage to do that. But every time I hear people do this, I believe, which has been going on for 30 years at least, I just always learn something new and something wonderful about the speaker. So thank you.
Thank you both very much for sharing. And Carol, I have to confess, I had no idea about your personal beliefs, and I'm just kind of blown away and captivated by the ideas that you were offering us this morning, and I want to hear more, and I hope you share, have an opportunity to share more of those experiences.
Carol, there was a word that you said that was unfamiliar. It was sonomic or sophonic?
Shamanic.
Oh, like shamans.
Shamans, yeah. Who was just speaking?
That was
John Riles.
John Riles. One of the things that I thought was interesting was, Norma, you talked about humor. Do you think humor will ever join the pantheon of our principles?
I worry about seeing a lot of things funny. I think so. I think it's part of being a human being and kind of a delightful part.
Commented to James that I think when I hear elder women and men speak about that feeling of self-acceptance and singing and loving yourself so much, I wonder, is that like a developmental thing you have to reach, or can you go ahead and get it over with in your 40s? Like, oh, do you remember, you know, feeling like you were capable of that? Or, you know, I know that you've been supported by the congregation probably, or just in your own spiritual journey, but I think that for me, every time I hear that, I'm reminded, like, go ahead and adopt that a little bit more, you know.
Was that a question?
I guess the question is when did that, yeah, you know?
When I was your age,
yeah,
when I was your age, I thought I should be someone else. And when I got to be 80, it sort of went like that. It's like, no, you're not someone else, and you won't be, and you're on your own. And you have to go and lose some control, and it's okay because people are there for you, you know? Yeah.
I'm about to be 68 years old this week, and I love this decade of my life. I take care of my 4-year-old granddaughter, who of course knows everything. And what's wonderful for me is that I can, am still discovering about me. At 68 years old, I'm still learning who I am. And that to me is mind-blowing. And I think part of it is that for the first time since I was born, it's just me. I'm single. I have no children to raise. I have no mother to tell me what to do. I have no father to try to please. I have no children. I am helping with Paisley, but it's just me. And I feel like I'm just beginning a journey. How can that be at this age?
There are many songs that take me back to moments early on for me when I was part of WOOF. Do you have any moments or experiences, ladies, that remind you of some of the earlier moments in WOOF for you?
One of my first experiences at WOOF, it took me a long time to get used to joys and sorrows because it reminded me of what I thought AA was. But one of the first times I came, Beth Elkin got up and she said, "I've had a second bout of cancer. I don't need casseroles. I don't need rides. I need you to be up for my boys." And I was sitting next to a young woman who said to the woman next to her, "I'm going to take her boys with my kids to go wherever they were going." And the woman said, "I didn't think you knew her." And she said, "I don't." And that was what WOOF is about for me.
Norma, you said that you did 4 This I Believe. Carol, is this your first time?
Yes.
Wow.
Oh.
Yes, and I laughed.
Oh. Now you're ready for a full service. You can do a full service.
Asking about the first memory at WOOF, I need to share just because, and I hadn't thought about it in a while, but I was my kid's mom had left me with four young ones, and I had a grandfather I'd been very close to who had just passed away. My mom came out to visit. Said, "We need to find you community," because I was pretty isolated. And I was sitting in one of these chairs, and Norma was right behind me, and she said, "I could just sense you could use a little something." And she said, "Do you mind if I give you a little back rub and a hug?" And it meant a great deal.
Well, let's have another round of applause for Carol and Norma.